If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
If you think you're somebody, right, and you're making money, like you can't be touched, like I'd think again, right? I think people, we just try to stay humble, right?
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Mike Russo has an extensive background in global luxury residential real estate. He's an accomplished professional with two decades of industry experience, boasting quantifiable success closing record-setting transactions on an international scale. Most recently, Russo served as Director of Business Development and COO of Concierge Auctions, a global real estate marketplace specializing in the auction sale of luxury homes, where he personally handled over 350 property sales across 20 states and in 15 countries. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hey, man, the pleasure's all mine. You know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Wow. So where did I start? So in real estate, I started at what is today called Realogy. At the time, it was called Cendant, which is the largest franchisor of real estate companies in America, in the world, probably. So they own the brands of Coldwell Banker, Century 21, ERA, Sotheby's International Realty, Better Homes and Gardens. And now they're franchising the Corcoran Group. So I started there. So Cendant at the time was a conglomerate of a number of different divisions. And I started there in 2003, and we were a $20 billion company. RCI, the timeshare network, they had started a division that is kind of like what VRBO became, to sell vacation rental franchises as the RCI Holiday Network. And I got a job there. I was in the energy business. And I was in a business that was similar to Enron, and Enron went under, and like it was, everybody went with it. Right. And so I wound up getting this job. I had a wife and three kids at the time. I have five total now. And so I got this job at the RCI Holiday Network, peddling vacation rental franchises. And I worked there, I think like 3 or 4 months, I forget. I was doing really well, selling deals. And one day there's a conference call and get everybody on the phone, say, you know what, we decide we're not doing this anymore. So the whole sales group, you have 2 weeks left. And like, I just started, right? I got like three little kids. And I was in Lake Placid, New York. I remember it like it was yesterday. I have a 9-hour drive home or something stupid. And like, you know, you got your flip phone back then. And it's, oh man, it's just brutal. So anyway, how I get started in real estate is we owned at the time Coldwell Banker Century 21 ERA. And I got offered a job to be the assistant vice president of the Coldwell Banker Group in the Midwest. So I was going to have to move from Boston to Chicago. And it was 2003, you know, job market wasn't great. And so we went, my wife and I, three kids picked up, went. Is that the guy that I was working for, not direct losses boss, right? Sort of. They told me up front that I was going to replace this guy that I was going to work with, right? And so here I go, I'm like moving my family halfway across the country, knowing that the guy I'm going to be working with, I'm supposed to replace.
Wow.
That's corporate America for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So luckily, the guy didn't have to got a reprieve, if you will, because in February of 2004, Cendant licensed the rights to Sotheby's International Realty from the auction house for 100 years to turn it into the franchise that most people know today. And I was one of the first five people within the company, like I, to be like, okay, we just bought the rights to this. It's like the first week and like you're moving over to this group. And so I don't know how much of this you want to hear. It's like a pretty big story. So I do that in 2006 because my daughter like doesn't know who I am and my kids are drawing pictures that daddy's not home. I decide to take a job, what was supposed to be a job and a minor partner at the Sotheby's International Realty in Aspen, Colorado for the owner there. And now I've got four kids. And so my wife and I, we sell our house, we move out there. Living in Western Colorado on the Western Slope. And there I was commuting for 3 months. My wife and kids were there for about a month. And the guy, the reason I was going there is even though the market was good, he wasn't a good operator. Mm. And so he walks into my office one day and says, hey, you know, I decided that if you don't want to take over the company, I'm just going to bankrupt it.
What?
Right?
Who says that?
You can't even make this shit up. Well, sorry. You can't make this stuff up.
What owner says that?
This guy.
Apparently.
Right? Yep. So 35 or 36 at the time, I think I'm, hot stuff. And I had already started turning it around. So I take over. I do it in a leveraged buyout, right? Because I don't have, a ton of money. And we're running and gunning and I'm cutting expenses and our revenue's raising. And then the crash happens, right? Yeah. And just, it's like a tidal wave. We lost $100 million in pending contracts in 1 week.
Holy smokes.
Right? It was a third of our yearly inventory gone, up in smoke.
Right.
Right. So long story short, I wind up combining my brokerage with my next largest competitor, who was an independent. He takes over my Sotheby's franchise, basically assumes my company. And then I built a software company for a year with a couple guys. And then 2010, I became partners with a guy named Chad Roffers and a woman named Laura Brady for Concierge Auctions. That's where I embarked on my auction career, where we sold, hundreds of homes. I sold homes between, 2 million and 20 million all over the world. And it was an awesome ride, right? And so in January 2017, my partners decided that we were heading in a different direction. They bought me out. And then in the middle of 18, I started SparkOffer. I started building SparkOffer with my partner, Max. And the idea behind SparkOffer was sort of to marry the best of standard offer and auction, right? Because I was buying and flipping homes and I was constantly getting called saying, sorry, it's now multiple offers. And you really had no idea how many offers there really were. You had no idea what people were bidding. And I'm like, this is just broken from so many places. And so that's how the journey started. It's a long-winded answer. I'm probably 5 minutes into your show, but that's how it started.
No, I think it's fascinating. And it helps paint a picture of your deep bench of experience. I mean, you'd kind of seen everything from business ownership, you had seen corporate America, you had seen the good, the bad, the ugly. And then especially going into Concierge Auctions was all luxury real estate, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was all luxury. That was our niche.
Right. And so especially launching an auction company in 2010, I mean, it wouldn't have been the time. Maybe now's the time to be in luxury real estate. I wouldn't figure 2010 would have been a great point in time to be.
Well, it was the wake, right? So Chad had owned the Sotheby's in Sarasota. That's how I knew him. Laura worked with him there. They actually launched Concierge in 08. Mm. So it was just sort of getting rolling. And 2010 is really when we sort of took off. And right before I joined in December of 09, they sold a house for share in Hawaii in a subdivision called Hualalai, which is where the Four Seasons is. And that sale put the company on the map, right?
Right.
And so, but, listen, 10, 11, 12, 13, it was the wake of the crash. There is so many people out there, guys that thought they had money, right? And they did have money at one point. And now you're selling their house. And literally this guy that I sold this house in Malibu, he's crying in the living room because he's yeah, you sold my house, but I don't have anything. I don't even know where I'm going to live tomorrow.
Wow.
Right. And this is a guy I sold the house for $5 million. He had a Porsche, somebody that you think has made it through life. Right.
Right.
At least the financial aspect. And it humbled a lot of people. If you got to learn, if you think you're somebody, right, and you're making money, you can't be touched. I think again, right. I think people, we just try to stay humble. Right. And so, but yeah, so we sold houses. My crowning achievement, I would say, was that after I left Concierge, a client called me up and asked me to represent him at an auction that Concierge was having. And I had the pleasure of helping him buy a house that was almost $50 million at auction in Hillsborough Beach, Florida.
That's wild. I mean, I want to hear a little bit more about the auction, luxury auction business, just because I think it's fascinating and not something we hear a lot about. I mean, outside of foreclosures and things like that, why do people elect to auction off luxury real estate as opposed to just selling it?
Well, they tried to sell it, right? So remember right now, just the crash was a moment in time, right? The craziness of today's market and luxury certainly taken off for the post-pandemic.
Right.
We're in this moment in time, right? And so the reason that people were choosing, and still do, Concierge has a very vibrant business. There's a couple other players, but they don't do much. But these houses are hard to price, right? Mm. And so, you know, and if you want to move to the front of the line, like we sold a property with Spark Offer, you know, which isn't an auction, but we sold this property in Spark Offer last summer in Aspen that, you know, 9 months earlier, we sold it for like $10.5 million. And 9 months earlier, I did a proposal for another guy in the same area, McLean Flats. And we said, okay, based on the velocity of homes for selling versus the number of homes for sale today, it could take you 7 years to sell this house.
Wow.
Right. Now, today, all those homes are gone. So like it took a pandemic to change that.
Right.
Right. But prior to that, if you're a seller and it's like, hey, I got my house on the market for $13 million or $15 million and I priced it at $13 million, but no one's showing up still to buy it, you know, what's it going to take? You know, you either can just keep playing the guessing game of dropping the price, or you can choose to an auction or some other, you know, kind of mechanism. And that's why, you know, it's a very, very cottage market, right? And so even, I don't know the exact numbers for Concierge today, but I'd be shocked to say there's 200 luxury homes sold in America and Europe at auction in a year. And I forget, God knows how many sold over a million last year. I mean, it's significant.
Right.
I actually did know the number. I just forgot.
It's all good. So what prompted Spark Offer, and what does it do that, you know, you guys didn't do at Concierge?
So Spark Offer is largely a software marketplace. It's, you know, eBay of real estate, if you will, right? And so a couple of things is that, and this is some things that we've kind of massaged along the way, is that, you know, the platform, to be on the platform, you have to list your home with a real estate agent, right? And I don't care if you hire a full service agent. I don't care if you hire like a 1% agent. Like, I'm not in your commission war. I'm not NAR. I'm not the real estate commission. Like, I'm not involved in any of that.
Right. Right.
But I actually tried for a time being to sort of be like Zillow, where it's like, hey, anybody can come. But then what happens is nobody sort of comes. Right. And so a marketplace doesn't really work very well without inventory.
Sure.
Right. And so number one, you got to be an agent for your seller to get their property on the platform. Number two is that it offers transparent pricing like an auction, right? Everybody can see what other people are bidding, but auctions are typically cash, no contingencies, right? And so in Spark Offer, the way we try to describe it is, imagine, like, just take this crazy multiple offer market we have today, 10, 20, 30, 40. I've heard as high as like 100 offers.
Right. Insanity.
Insane. We call it bid sanity. Right.
Yeah.
And so, but it's all on everybody else's terms. Right. Meaning, like, the buyers are coming in and saying, I'll offer no appraisal. I'll offer 400. I'll offer 450. I'll offer 470. And everybody's guessing.
Right.
Right? And so in Spark Offer, the agent and the seller are saying, okay, imagine here's the purchase contract. Let's put what the seller wants on the purchase contract, not what everybody else wants. Let's put what the seller wants. So, you know, the seller's going to do, you know, they're going to allow a mortgage, you know, somebody to get a mortgage. They're going to allow somebody to have a 5-day inspection contingency or not, right? They're going to allow no appraisal. They're not allowing appraisals, let's say. And so then what happens is the buyers get registered. They either have or don't have an agent, right? 50% of them actually do not have a buyer's agent, and they get registered on the platform and they have to qualify, right? So they have to send in, you know, their funds to the listing agent to say, here's either my cash funds or here's my mortgage pre-qual letter. And that establishes the person's bidding limit. They cannot bid over that. So there's not this whole juggle through the whole process to say, like, hey, I'm giving you my letter for 450 now because I don't want you to know I can spend five, right? Because the seller will just counter me.
Right.
Because once you set this pool up, the buyers are going against both the minimum price established by the seller that is not shown and each other, right? And the buyers are psyched. We just had somebody from Ohio on, you know, a $300,000 house. They lost 11 homes prior to getting the transparency of Spark Offer to bid, right?
Wow.
11 homes they lost. Didn't know why they lost, right? And so everything in our lives is transparent, like booking a plane ticket, finding a hotel room, everything is being done on the internet with some aspect of like, what does this cost?
Sure.
Right. And so we're bringing that now to real estate with SparkOffer. We're doing all price points. Like, you know, I don't care if it's I think somebody just posted like a lot for like $15,000 somewhere in Florida to we've sold houses for over $10 million.
Interesting. And so how does the process work? You the buyer, and just clarify what I'm understanding here. The seller puts out what they want. The buyers then come in and they have their caps set based on what they've
What
they've qualified for. And then what?
And then they're granted the ability to place their offers through the platform. And so, for example, I'll go back to this $300,000 house. The bid increments in that case were $1,250, right? The system sets it. And so I think the bidding started at $250,000. And so, you know, somebody places a $250,000 bid, the next guy can place a bid for $251,250,
right?
They can go over that if they want, but they always have the ability to keep bidding up until their limit. And we have a clock, just like you have on eBay or lots of other systems, except our clock doesn't stop as long as people are placing bids. So like you know, it's not about being the last second guy. It's about truly being the last guy or, you know, person, right? And so for example, if somebody placed a bid with 1 minute left, the clock will reset to 5 minutes. And so the clock will have to go an entire 5 minutes with no bids, right? So now the seller knows like everybody had the chance, right? The system's also very smart. The system knows, just like most things on the internet, Facebook, everything else, like knows whether you're there or not. SparkOffer knows if you're on the platform or not. And so if there's 10 minutes left in a sale and it says, hey, Sam's not here, Sam's going to get a text message and says, hey, Sam, the sale ends in 10 minutes. Right. So, you know, you might've got busy, but most people have their phone like pretty close to them and they're getting that notification. So, but the big thing is sellers, we interviewed lots of sellers, right? Of course, especially in today's market, they want to maximize their equity, right? I want to get the most money for my house. And buyers want the opportunity to buy, right? And SparkOffer gives them that equal opportunity once they qualify that they're never shut out, right? You're not getting called and say like, sorry, we just went with, you know, another offer. And well, I want to bid again. Sorry, we're not doing that, right?
When you mentioned transparency, what did you mean by that on the SparkOffer platform? Like, how do I see what everybody else is offering and what their bids are? And I can say, oh, hey, and just so I understand this properly, the seller sets the terms, the buyers just have to agree to them, or can you also, okay.
Yeah. The only difference is where it's more akin to the standard process is a seller has the right. They don't have to take the highest, right? So for example, let's say you and I were bidding and I was the highest and you weren't, but you were a cash buyer and I'm not. And let's say you bid 5,000 less than me. The seller could turn around and say, I'm going to take Sam because he's cash. Sorry, Mike, I know you bid the highest, right? Thank you very much.
Right.
But like Sam's cash buyer, I'm going to take Sam.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. That's fascinating. So like you said, you guys are more the eBay of real estate. And I'm trying to figure out what the difference is. Like there's a lot of similarities, but are there differences between how eBay operates and maybe how SparkOffer operates?
Well, number one is the clock,
right?
So that's number one. Number two is eBay's never established a real estate marketplace. They tried. And yeah, I mean, there is a spot on eBay to put real estate for sale, but there's nothing there. And the most people that go there, it's like a fishing expedition. Right. Where in conjunction with us, because we have agents that are listing the home, right, they're then putting in the MLS, notifying all the buyer's agents, hey, you got to put your bids through SparkOffer, right? So you're utilizing if you're not utilizing what everybody else is using, then, you know, you're really talking about an impossible task unless you're, you know, Amazon, right? So you got to be at a portion of where everybody's at. And so we're more of a mechanism, right, than the originator. Because most people today find their home on Zillow or Redfin or most people. And one of the reasons we made the decision to have a listing agent only, sellers told us in our interviews they wanted to hire listing agents, wanted a local agent. they didn't want to necessarily do this themselves. Now, they all want to pay them the least possible, right? So anybody that doesn't think that that's coming down the pike is kidding themselves.
Right.
Right. But the commission compression's real, but they didn't want to go it alone.
So how do you guys get around, like, because you mentioned National Association of Realtors, NAR, earlier. How do you guys get around not having to be licensed in all these states and things like that? Like, what does that look
like? Well, we're just a platform, right? Like, all they're doing is placing bids for the platform. There's a listing agent that listed the property. The final contract's done by the agents and on their local forms. Like, we don't touch any of that.
Right. So is there a flat fee then that the sellers have to pay to you guys for listing their property?
The buyer pays 15 basis points. So it's $150 per 100,000.
That seems ridiculously low.
Yeah. Well, I have a core belief on that, right? Which is, you know, when it comes to technology, they want everything to be free, right? And so, I've dealt with a lot of agents in my life. Agents, they're used to paying for everything and they're under, like I said, commission compression. They don't want added costs.
Right.
Right. Sellers don't want added costs. They're trying to get their fees down. And so, you know, we're just saying, you know, hey, we're just trying to add a small piece, right? That's not, you know, breaking the bank for people to use the platform.
Right. Right. No, that's fascinating. What a cool idea. What have been some things that have kind of evolved as you've gone through, you know, the development of this platform? How is kind of your process or your thinking behind it evolved?
So SparkOffer 1.0, that I refer to it, allowed buyers to write in a standard offer on a non-binding form electronically on SparkOffer that got submitted directly to the listing agent and the seller. And then local agents could upload their standard offers, right? And they didn't like it, right? Like, agents would rather just send it via email. Everyone questioned the non-binding offers when it's like, hey, you know, like, that offer you got with the inspection contingency is really non-binding, right? Like, it really doesn't matter. You know, commercial guys, like, you do a lot of commercial, like, for them, it's easy, right? Like, they get it. Like, they write letters of intent all the time and it's just a different animal. And it was more akin to that. The other thing is that I think that was it. It made the agents, I think, feel more threatened because it started to touch contracts. And literally agents would say, what do you mean a buyer can do that online? Like, that's what I do. Like, you're taking away my value proposition. Okay. And it's like, you know what? Somebody else is going to take it away. You may not want it to be me, but, like, let me tell you, that's coming down the pike, right?
Absolutely.
And so we then just completely transformed the platform to this open bidding platform where now, like, literally all you're doing is pressing a button and there is no contract until there's a winner.
Can the buyer back out after they've won?
Sure. Just like they could in a standard contract.
What's it cost them?
Nothing.
Wow.
So, because remember, what's happening is they're not getting in. This is where it's not like eBay, right? Like, if you go on eBay, like, anybody can place a bid.
Sure.
Like, you actually have to get either through your agent or directly with the listing agent. Like, you got to get in your ability to bid, right? It's got to be there. Otherwise, you don't get a chance.
Right.
Right. So you got to have some seriousness to do that.
Sure. Right?
So that's number one. Number two is, like I said, it's no different. I try to model it akin, like, if I wrote an offer today in a house and the seller accepted it and I had written it with a 10-day inspection contingency or I didn't give them my $1,000 binder check or whatever it is in your market, it doesn't matter, right? And I called up today and said, you know what? I changed my mind. Okay. There's nothing you can do, right? And so I'm not even touching that stuff. I'm just trying to be like, hey, you know what? The consumer wants things to be faster. We can make them faster. Like, we can make them more transparent. Let's focus on that. My point was to say, like, our mission is, like, on speed.
Right. Speaking of speed, how much time does it take for a buyer to get signed up on the platform through either you guys or through their agent once they've uploaded their stuff?
That'll get faster. But, like, right now, it's just as fast as you can get your paperwork to the listing agent. So, like, if you texted them your proof of qual letter, like, they can be turned on in an hour and, you know, however fast the agent responds.
Got it. That's very, very interesting. Huh? Man, this is awesome. What do you think? I guess let me ask this. What is the transaction volume through SparkOffer right now? And then what do you want it to be?
So, like, in the last year, we've done 100 million. So it's not super high, right? Like it's good, right?
Right.
What I want it to be is 10,000 homes a year, right? I think we're going to start touching a lot of different parts of the market. Like today, you're already starting to see it. Like where's the delta going to be on what slows the market down, right? And it's going to be, it's always the same thing, right? Sellers are going to start to get too aggressive, right? And the buyers are going to be on the low end, they're going to be pushing back, right? And so, you know, and I think Spark Offer will be a big help with that too, because then, you know, today all you get to do is start with a static list price. And the market's so fickle. This was even pre-pandemic. We had houses on Spark Offer in version one where somebody listed a house for $415, nothing. They had lots of showings, lots of open house people, no offers. They drop the price to $399. They get multiple offers and sell it for $415. $15,000, like less than 5%. They went from no offers to multiple offers, right? That's how tight it's getting, right? And it'll come back, right? That's going to come back as people start to stretch and buyers look at it online like, you know, I'm not interested in that. And so that's one. Two is the forbearance on foreclosure is going to end soon, right? And that's millions of people. And, you know, I was talking to you pre the show about wholesalers, right? Like that's an industry I just don't get. And, you know, we didn't talk about iBuyers, right? Like, hey, that was the other big thing from our seller interviews. They all want to move on their time frame, right? And so it was the first time it kind of expanded my mind to the iBuyer and the Open Doors and the Zillow offer stuff. And so for us, you know, like you look at it and say, okay, you know, you can't pay your mortgage today and you're going to have to short sell your house. The government's probably going to push the banks to help people short sale and not foreclose this time.
Right.
Right. By the way, I left out through that whole story. I had to short sell my house in 2010, right? 2011, right? And it sucked.
Right.
Right. All of it sucked. And I like no one was making any offers. Like then we had to go through this process with Wells Fargo. It was just awful. And so, and then you wonder, like, if you are you getting the, you know, most money, because today you might be able to get out whole, right? You know, who knows what's gonna happen. My point is that with Spark Offer, like we're gonna be trying to help those people too, right? Because it's gonna be really important for them to be able to get the most money. And the best way to get the most money is transparently getting people to bid against each other.
Right. Yeah. And if they can exit their houses, you know, in a much faster timeline, then yeah, faster timeline, transparent bidding, maximizing the sale price and minimizing just hurdles to getting that done. Then that's super cool, man. I've enjoyed this. This has been a fascinating, I love outside of the box thinking. And clearly you're doing that with something that the marketplace just doesn't currently have. And, you know, the other thing you're not doing, which, you know, the Zillows of the world are tending to do, which is just honk off all of the real estate agents. I mean, so you're still incorporating a lot of the agents and people like that in your business, you know, I think Zillow came out, was it last year, and finally said, hey, yeah, our goal in the end is to, you know, basically nix real estate agents because we don't need them anymore.
That was their goal in the very beginning. It was just, that's why Spencer was the CEO for many years. It took over from Richard, and only at some point did Richard come back, because that part never changed for Richard.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you've done some creative stuff. I've loved it. This has been tons of fun. Let's jump here into the final four. The first question is this: what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
One piece of advice to an aspiring investor. The deal is all about how well you buy.
Right.
I don't care how smart you think you are, or how much cheaper you think you can build, or what you can save on labor or anything else. If you buy the property wrong, you're in tough shape.
Right. Yeah, that's a fact. Question number two is this: when it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
So I read a lot. I would say the biggest thing that I've done in the last couple of years is that after I left Concierge, I enrolled in some real estate courses at Harvard Online. And I learned a lot. They're very good.
That's interesting. Yeah. You don't typically think of universities, at least, you know, the exposure I've had to it, the real estate departments were rather lacking. So,
well, the Harvard Online has a guy from Denver. I forget his name, that he's really an investor and he's the one that teaches the course. Very good.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Question number three is this: when it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you are making the world a better place?
I work at a food pantry.
That's fun.
It's real.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Man, that's great. Good for you. Thanks for doing that. Question number four is, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or get on your platform and list a house, what's the best way to do that?
So sparkoffer.com. You can get in touch with me at mike@sparkoffer.com, or they can just call me up. So 970-274-9801. I return every phone call.
Mike, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you. I really love this. Thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.